Hi, everyone. Welcome to tonight's episode of Revolution Radio. I'm the host, Christian Perez, and you can see me here the last Wednesday of every month. I want to give a special thank you to Brian, our fearless leader, the senior organizer at Revolution Radio. And if you want to pop in with me really quick, we can go over some announcements before we get into the show today. How are we doing, Leah?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Leah, if you don't know, and if you should know, because, you know, you should be watching Revolution Radio every week, every show we put out. Leah is the writer here for Revolution Radio. She's one of the big forces behind the scenes here. But doing okay today, Leah?
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be a big force behind the scenes. I do what I can.
Good. Looking forward to tonight's discussion. I'll be chatting with Sam Yang, the host of the Southpaw podcast. But there's a couple things we want to go over first, Leah. I guess number one, it's as always, we want to ask you to donate. Please donate to Revolution Radio. I believe the link is still njrevolutionradio.com/donate. If you can, please do so. If you're interested in getting involved with Revolution Radio, you can check out our editorial board, giving us ideas for content, sitting in on editors' meetings, and so on and so forth. But there's a couple things we wanted to talk about tonight, Leah, before we jump in. Number one is the Days of Unity food drive. For anyone that's interested, you can go to daysofunity.org. March 6th, there's going to be a food drive in New Brunswick. So if you can, please get involved with that. It's definitely something we would like everyone to help out with. New Jersey Revolution Radio is about helping. It's about activism. So if you can give a little food money, please do so. There it is right there. Brian putting up the post, daysofunity.org. Thank you, Brian. What else is there to talk about, Leah? There was a couple more announcements that we had to make.
Oh, man. Well, I believe that we are going to be starting with Texas and all this stuff that's going on there.
Oh, yeah. So we want to talk about Texas. So the first thing I want to preface what I say by saying this is, like, I get it. We here at Revolution Radio, we get it. We know that there's a lot of people in Texas that voted for Ted Cruz and that goofy lieutenant governor and whoever that mayor of Colorado City, Texas were, who the ex-mayor of Colorado City, Texas, whoever the heck he is. But we are very much aware that a lot of the suffering caused in Texas is like, there's this trend among a lot of liberals the past week or so to kind of mock people in Texas and their suffering because it's a red state. And I see that as an absolute shame. We've had 58 people die, 58 lives lost as a result of, you know, just mismanagement, poor infrastructure, an outdated, underfunded, sloppy shop of an electrical grid. And we see them scrambling to solve this problem. There's no infrastructure to shovel the snow. They don't have plows. They don't have shovels. And then, of course, the great senator from Texas, Ted Cruz, decided to tuck tail and run to Cancun, Mexico. Did you hear about that, Leah?
Of course. I mean, who didn't hear about that? It's great. I'm just thinking about, imagine this man was president. I mean, I feel like if he was ever going to be president one day, hopefully this ruined it, if it wasn't ruined already. I mean, he's just amazing. Fearless leader, truly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. There's all these people, of course, conservative talking heads, hacks, creeping out of the woodwork, trying to defend him, saying, well, what could he have done? He literally could have done anything other than get on a plane and leave the country. He could have been shoveling snow. Tim Boyd, there is Daryl posted it. Tim Boyd is the ex-mayor of Colorado Springs, Texas. Yeah, I mean, this is the guy, along with the lieutenant governor, who said, look, you're on your own. The government doesn't owe you anything. It's a fundamental difference of the role of government. This is the difference between the right wing and the left wing. So 58 people are dead. Millions of people are without power, without water, without energy, without heat. And the Republican Party's answer is you're on your own. Or they just pack up and leave the country. So for anyone worried about climate change, what our, you know, political leaders are going to be doing, business leaders are going to be doing in the future, you just got a glimpse of that. Packing up and leaving. Ted Cruz could have been raising money. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from the Bronx is raising money. He could have been calling people up. He could have been shoveling snow himself. He could have been tweeting. He literally could have done anything as long as he stayed in Texas and pretended to lead. But unfortunately, we see that he couldn't do that. And like you said, Leah, I hope that this absolutely annihilates his chances of becoming president of the United States. Personally, I can't stand Ted Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, after what we've seen Ken hold office, who knows? But yeah, I just think it's so funny. After they called him out, he was doing some social media work, like pictures of him handing out water bottles, videos of him lifting rugs, carrying them out of houses. But I just think it's so silly. And also, conservative media is now trying to blame wind turbines for the lack of energy. But you see, it's either you have the Green New Deal or you don't. And we don't have it. So why are you complaining about it? They're trying to make it as if that's to blame, but that's not what we have.
I've heard different numbers, but I heard literally that green energy only makes up at most, I'll say, about 20% of the electrical power in the state of Texas. Now, these are also wind turbines that they cut corners on. They weren't necessarily built to work in winter. Now they can work in winter. We see wind turbines in Antarctica working in freezing temperature. Right. But rather than blame the fact that they were cutting corners, the GOP in Texas, rather than blame the fact that, they have poor leadership, greedy leadership, for-profit leadership, they're blaming the Green New Deal. And thankfully, people are calling it out for what it is. It's silly. It's ignorant. And it's just more right-wing, more misinformation. But moving on to more right-wing misinformation, unfortunately, this week, we also reached 500,000, half a million COVID deaths in the United States of America. Half a million deaths. Now, I'm of the opinion that the overwhelming majority of those deaths could have been prevented if we had, again, better leadership in this country. I'm not saying the Democratic Party is the solution to all our problems because I don't think they are, but the Republican Party has shown consistently in the past year alone that they are unable to handle natural disasters, that when it hits the fan, that they're nowhere to be found. Donald Trump wanted all the praise, but none of the responsibility. He left all the states on their own. We see the leadership in Texas just melting away. So this is Republican leadership. This is what we can expect from the Republican Party moving forward, whether it's pandemics, whether it's natural disasters. It's for them to pack up and run away. But there's one more point I wanted to get to before we jumped into tonight's show, and it is the Conservative Political Action Conference, also known as CPAC. I don't know if you're familiar with them, Leah. Have you heard of them before?
This is actually, fortunately, or I don't know, my
I would
first,
say fortunately.
yeah,
The
my
first time you
first
heard of it?
time that I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah. So what it is all the right-wing characters. All everybody coming out of the woodwork, all the mutants, all the roaches, just all the white supremacists, all the bigots get together in one place every year, and it's called the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's this giant conference that all the Republicans go to, and believe it or not, the big I don't want to say, I guess the theme this year that they're going with, the title of the conference this year is, I have it there, America Uncancelled. Because not natural disasters, not the pandemic, not systemic racism, not the inherent failures of capitalism, not our endless wars abroad. Those are not the problems facing society. The biggest problem facing society is conservatives are being canceled. Now, when conservatives complain about being canceled, what they're really saying is they don't like the fact that they're being held accountable or that there's consequences for their actions. So again, the wine fest, the victimization fest is going to be called America Uncancelled. But the best thing about all this is the fact that they've already canceled one of their speakers. So the right wing is known to, oh, here we go. Thank you, Leah. Here we go. So CPAC 2020, we have just learned that someone we invited to CPAC has expressed reprehensible views that have no home with our conference or our organization. The individual will not be participating at our conference. And, somebody snarkily comments, so you canceled someone from an event you were calling America Uncancelled. So look, this is who the right wing is. They trade in white supremacy. They trade in racism. They trade in sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, all the evils of the world. And then obviously this was going to happen. One of these types was going to slip through the cracks. They were going to give them a platform. And one of them was eventually going to cross the line. And they did, right? So there's going to be some doozies at the conference, and now that we see that there's some doozies leading up to the conference, but this is what we have to look forward to in the upcoming year. CPAC, America Uncancelled, they're already canceling people. And of course, this is the right wing. They've made their name from canceling people, whether it's, churches or businesses or politicians. The right's whole shtick in the culture war is trying to cancel people. Nike. Remember when they were trying to get people to stop buying Nikes? They're trying to get people, you know, whatever outrage it is this week or next week. They're always trying to get everyone else to cancel. But when it gets turned on them, that's when it's time to freak out. Am I forgetting anything, Leah? Is there anything else that I'm supposed to be mentioning that I haven't yet?
No, I believe not. Although before we take Sam on, I would like to there's a couple things that Brian wanted me to mention.
Oh,
he actually did a special report a couple days ago on Revolution Radio, and it was about the Poor People's Army in Philadelphia. There's a situation going on where homes had been reclaimed for people, but now in the middle of the storm and this horrible winter weather, 30 homes, they are trying to kick people out of the homes, and the Poor People's Army is trying to do something about it. Yeah, it's a great thing that they're doing. So I'm going to put it in the comments, the special report, where you can find out more information. Yeah. And definitely they're looking for some civil disobedience up in here. So
the United States of America, where we have I looked it up. There's 500 and we'll be generous and say 554,000 homeless people in the United States. 554,000 homeless people in the United States. We also have 17 million vacant homes in the United States.
Yeah.
We can house every homeless person in this country and their family.
We
criminalize the homeless, and we don't really understand that the homeless, a lot of them are coming from abused backgrounds, dealing with mental illness, all kinds of horror stories. Most people don't just wake up one day and decide to go live on the streets. There's a story there. And unfortunately, we're not big in this country with understanding people's stories. We're very big at judging people and writing them off. I think there was one more thing we had to mention, Leah.
Yes. So there is going to be a Know Your Rights Zoom teach-in tomorrow, Thursday, February 25th, 7 to 9 p.m. It's sponsored by the Up Against the Law Legal Collective, as well as the Poor People's Party. And it's a really good thing, and you can go there to learn. So that's going to be tomorrow night, and I'm going to put that up on the stream.
Yeah, so, sounds good. The Know Your Rights Zoom teach-in. Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, the Green Party of Philadelphia, and the Black Alliance for Peace. Come check it out. It's Black History Month. The Up Against the Law Legal Collective will lead the discussion. It doesn't hurt to educate yourself and to know your rights. New Jersey Revolution Radio is all about getting that information out there. What was I going to say? So I guess forming a segue into the next section, I want to ask about how old would you say social media is, Leah?
Oh, dear.
I'm thinking I was a freshman as an undergrad, so MySpace, Mi Gente, something like with 17 years old.
Honestly, yeah, I was starting to think maybe around 20-ish, 17 is 20-ish, so yeah.
it's social media is 17 years old. It hasn't been around that long. And in that time, conservatives have freaked out enough to deem it the number one threat to this country. Why? Because we talk about social media. What is the problem with social media? And I touched on this in episode 49 of the Southpaw podcast when I was a guest on Sam's podcast. It's this idea that prior to social media, almost every narrative we heard in this country coming through media was controlled by someone else. Corporate elites, usually old men, old white men, old rich white men, and so on and so forth. But with social media, we've allowed ourselves to democratize every conversation. Everyone can comment. Now, there's some good with that and there's some bad with that. But the backlash on behalf of the right has been, you know, for them, or the way the right has reacted has been for them to freak out and to play the victim. Right. They can no longer make the same racist, bigoted, sexist jokes of the past without being held accountable. Powerful men through the Me Too movement are being held accountable. And with an event like America Uncancelled, that is a challenge to that. That is a challenge to the democratization of the American narrative. Before social media, even going back decades ago, you only got a couple points of view on television. And if you even saw a person of color, it was usually a black man, and that person was expected to speak for everyone. So we're seeing a lot of backlash against social media. We're seeing a lot of, he's saying, how old is LiveJournal? Daryl, I have no
21,
idea.
21, actually. So he got you there. It's 21 years old. And
21
that is,
years. Okay, so he's way ahead of me.
That is Russian-owned social media. Yeah.
But I guess conservatives whining about being censored, complaining about not being given a platform when they're giving all the platforms in the world. I think that pretty much leads into our guest tonight. So Leah, if you don't mind, could you please let Sam in? So
absolutely, I'll see you guys later. Have fun. In,
I just want to get started. Sam Yang is a writer. He is a philosopher. He is a martial artist, and he's the host of the Southpaw Podcast. How you doing today, Sam?
I'm good. I was trying to text a friend because he's a big fan of Daryl Lamont Jenkins, and I just saw him.
Well, tell your friend every Tuesday night we host the Idavox Report. Daryl Lamont Jenkins is the host. Yours truly is, I guess I'm the number three guy on the show. I'm the Ed McMahon on the show. I'm either the Ed McMahon or the band leader if it's the talk show. But every Tuesday night, Idavox Report, Daryl Lamont Jenkins. Last night we had a woman by the name of Beth Foster from the Dangerous Ideas Collective, and she talked about being a journalist and an anti-fascist educator. So let your friend know about the podcast. It's a lot of fun. Daryl's a great guy, and he's got a great story. He likes doxing conservatives and white supremacists, so that's right up my alley.
There you go.
But so we're here tonight to talk about you, Sam. Let's just jump right into it. So you are the host of the Southpaw Podcast. It is a left-wing podcast focusing on combat sports, fight breakdowns. So boxing, kickboxing, mixed martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, professional wrestling. All right. And then, you do fight analyses and breakdowns. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that is a big part of the show. That would be half the show.
Yeah. What is the goal of Southpaw?
I don't necessarily have any long-term goals because I like to keep those things open-ended. Short-term is just to grow it as much as possible, try to raise as much money as I can for it through listeners and people through social media, so that not only can it be something that can sustain me and help make this like my full-time job basically, but also give me an opportunity to hire other voices and other staff members. So especially like if we're just talking about combat sports, there's a lot of women or trans queer people who've never had a say in combat sports. That's a perspective that you don't hear about. And actually you do hear about it, but it's always in the negative or that it is this boogeyman. And I wanted to be able to bring on staff members who can also bring that perspective, people of color, but also bring on staff so we could focus also on the political economy, so the more politics side of combat sports, and then also using combat sports as a lens to understand greater political economy. So I use a lot of analogies, instead of like factory analogies, I use combat sports analogies to explain a lot of the heady stuff in political economy. I use a lot of combat sports to explain like Marxist ideas, explaining how there's already these type of dialectical ideas already embedded into how you teach martial arts and so forth. And then half of the podcast is bringing on people like you and other people like that, where we're just discussing whatever. So, it is very much similar to the format of Joe Rogan podcast or Joe Rogan Experience, right? Because he talks about combat sports. He talks about just whatever he finds interesting. And I think that's why people have such a hard time nailing him down and saying he's this or he's that. And but he definitely has a skew. Otherwise, if he didn't, right, and he was, whatever people claim to be, he would seem a lot closer to our podcast or represent a lot of the ideas that our podcast represents, but he never does, right?
Yeah.
So that means that whatever we represent is never represented on his podcast. So read into that what you will. But as far as format goes, is from my perspective, which is very, very different from his, but it is that idea of bringing on people I find interesting and also talking about stuff I like, which is combat sports. But also I skew younger than him, but also I'm much, let's say, less into the alpha male toxic masculinity stuff that he's into. So, he might find things like anime or pro wrestling or things like that dumb or beneath him, which later recently started softening up on just because he's so much into the algorithm and he sees those things get clicks. But those are things that I don't have to try to be into. I've always been into anime. Yeah. I've always been into pro wrestling, K-pop. So it's like, it is much more modern, current, and much more representative, even though I'm not that young, much more representative of the interests of the young left. So I would say a lot of the listeners don't even like combat sports. They just listen for other reasons. And, it's not just podcasts. There's also all the social media. So some people don't even listen to the podcast. Some people just follow me on Twitter or just follow me on social media as well.
They do a lot of posting on the Southpaw message board on Facebook. People love that. That's its own community. So speaking of community, I wanted to ask you, was there a community that already existed that you wanted to cater to? Or is this a community that in many ways you feel that you helped build?
Something that came into being, right? It's something that I didn't know existed. So when me and my co-host Paul came up with this idea, it was kind of like a lark, right? We were just so unhappy with Joe Rogan podcast. But at the same time, he had a monopoly where if you wanted somebody to talk about combat sports for an extended period of time or bring on certain people to talk about it, people from combat sports, he was the only person. And so he brings you in for that, and then you end up staying for like all the wrong reasons, right? All of his other guests. So when he says he's not a pipeline, is having even replicated his model, I realize it is a pipeline, because a lot of people who are apolitical, or even might be centrist or even a little center right, have somehow stumbled upon our podcast, listened, so they came for the MMA and ended up staying for the politics, and then they ended up getting converted over to left-wing politics. So seeing that that's how it works for me, it's bi-directional. It also works for him the other way as well. So in talking about all of this, I guess like unconsciously it's been weighing on me, and then one day I just snapped and was like, let's do something, let's create something. And I didn't want to do this alone, so I talked to Paul and then my co-host, and then we started it that day. And it was kind of a joke, but kind of also felt real that it might be just catering to five people. So even like in our first few episodes, we joked about the Mighty Five, but we were going to have a monopoly on all five. And it was like that. It was like five people for a while. So at the beginning, we didn't think, because we already understood that martial arts, combat sports was so right wing. And the reason why is because of masculinity. Yeah. Whether people believe in, you know, there's a lot of orientalizing, which is its own problem. Oh, yeah. But whether they believe in all this like mystical beliefs about Eastern, whatever, people floating in the clouds or whatever.
Fireballs.
Yeah. Even those people still come to martial arts because of this idea of masculinity. They want to be tough guys, right? They just want to be an enlightened tough guy.
Yeah, right? Just different views of tough guys.
And then because of that tough guy, like, I guess, vector, a lot of right-wing politics gets mixed into it. So we didn't know how many people were interested in this kind of stuff who were into left-wing politics. So we hedged it. We thought it would be five. It was five for a while, and then it grew. It didn't grow like organically, like little by little. It was like nothing. And then I think starting with George Floyd and all the protests last summer is when it really started exploding. So yeah. I think that's when a lot of people started joining in and thinking about this. Because I think for them, why would they care about this? Because they basically consider there's no point in left-wing politics in combat sports because none of this is right-wing. And then they realize, oh, crap, all along this has all been right-wing. So maybe we do need that. So even people who've been aware of us didn't think there was a need, so they didn't bother listening to us. And then they realized, no, there is. They've been so conditioned and indoctrinated into right-wing thinking that they didn't know what their default was right wing. So I think a lot of people came on during that time. And then from that, I met more people who were saying that they were thinking about doing something like this, or there have been attempts at this in the past, or maybe there is stuff like this. Like I found out about other groups, other pages, other organizations, but they're not quite like us because, like I said, I tend to skew a younger audience. A lot of the stuff were like still very much left wing, but still very much entrenched in orientalizing a lot of like these ideas of mystical Budo beliefs. Or they were just like all older people who were still they weren't modernized martial arts. So it was like kind of, there's nothing wrong with karate or whatnot, but they were also traditionalists, which to me then also doesn't seem very left wing to be so traditional. Yeah. Right.
One problem kind of overtook another, right? It went from like this almost like worshiping of Mr. Miyagi's and Eastern Wu. And it's like they threw that out the door, but now it's like just a bunch of macho alpha males.
Yeah.
It's like out of the frying pan into the fire. It's kind of like a libertarian who gets rid of religion, but then decides to worship the free market. It's like, you're not really better off, pal.
Yeah. So we never found anything quite like this. So I would say there's been attempts at that. There's other organizations that are much older than us that I would say is adjacent to this, but nothing as open-ended and nothing as broad-based as this. And I would even say there are left-wing that isn't woo-woo or that isn't problematic, and that they were very much still like catered around, like, let's say it was just martial arts for Black radicals only, or maybe for just Asian radicals only, right? And so nothing quite like us, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, that does make sense. I was in a Jewish fraternity in college, right? So racism, white supremacy excludes certain groups from any number of institutions, organizations. So that's going to force them to create their own organization. So, you know, Chinese people are excluded in society. East Asians are excluded. They go underground. They form their own martial arts communities. African Americans form their own martial arts schools. Was there a particular aha moment for you? Like, was there a certain Joe Rogan episode you were listening to where you were just like, I can't anymore? Was there like a straw that broke the camel's back where you're like, no, I got to do this podcast. This is just not sufficient.
I think it was, you know, I'm really into strategies and techniques in martial arts and especially in combat sports. So I like listening to all the nerdy stuff when they bring on a coach and they break down like what they were thinking, how they strategized against an opponent, things like that. I'm much more interested in that than like the motivational aspect, like dig deep, you know, like Teddy Atlas. Like, I can't stand him because all of his stuff, the famed boxing trainer, he's, you know, his record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
The people he's trained speaks for itself. But if you ever listen to him or see how he coaches, he's less of a strategist and much more of a motivational person. He's going to tell you you're a fireman, right? I'm not so much interested in that. And so I think Rogan had brought on a coach who I wanted to listen to. And in the middle of breaking down stuff, Rogan also started talking to this person randomly about like Ben Shapiro and Dave Rubin. I think those were the two people. And it's like, I think that was what finally got to me. I think unconsciously and consciously, actually, like I've been getting annoyed by him or not even annoyed. I didn't like him already.
Yeah.
I felt like, but I wanted to consume stuff about mixed martial arts. And this was before like a lot of the newer MMA podcasts, like Ariel Helwani showed up, right? It was just him. So I was like, how do I just listen to this stuff without all the Joe Rogan stuff? Like, why would he randomly ask a coach about these other people and then pull them into this like right-wing rabbit hole live in front of me? How do I avoid all this stuff? And I think that's when I was like, I guess the only way is DIY. Like, we got to do it ourselves.
Yeah, I love the idea. So you're really good at choking people. What are your thoughts on institutional racism? It's like, wait, where's the transition there? And like one of the ways Joe Rogan can protect himself is, you know, for every, you know, joke of a Jordan Peterson or a goof like Dave Rubin that he brings on, eventually he brings on a Cornel West, he brings on a Bernie Sanders, and those are his most popular episodes. And I sit there sometimes and I laugh as I'm watching the headlines online, and I'm like, Sam has been doing this for over a year or two now.
Yeah.
Right. Like he has a couple, you know, he brings on a couple left wingers, prominent left wingers as tokens, almost as giveaways. And then he's praised for that. And I'm like, yeah, Sam has been doing this for some time now. I mean, you're like he sticks his toe in it and you're totally submerged.
You would think, right, if that's the stuff, that's the only episodes people like, then why did he listen to him? Just come to me, right?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, you can just trim the fat. We can cut out the middleman, go right to Sam, and, you know, check out episode 49 while you're at it. It's cool. It'll be a good one. So next thing I wanted to ask you was, what about like gyms feedback? What has feedback been like with regards to Southpaw? I know a number of left-wing gyms exist in the country. Have they reached out to you? Have they come looking for you? And by the way, anybody, that's the link there, episode 49. That was the episode I was on the Southpaw podcast. Check it out. A lot of the stuff we talked about, it is a timeless episode. I believe you used the phrase earlier, Sam. Anything related, you know, this is the year of QAnon, the January 6th riot rally, you know, white supremacist rally, what you want to call that. That episode, that really good conversation we had is very much related to everything going on right now with QAnon, with the rise of Trumpism. And, you know, with Gina Carano, as we'll talk about, I would like to address her in a few, her recent blunder. Talk about going from the penthouse to the outhouse, going from Disney and Lucasfilm all the way to Ben Shapiro, making movies in Ben Shapiro's basement. Like, oh, man, that's a drop. I don't even know how to get to that. But before I get to that, I wanted to ask you, how long have you been training martial arts, Sam?
Oh, man. I think I was 6 when I started my first class. But to touch upon something before we move on too quickly, about your episode, actually, the reason why I'm so open-ended about what Southpaw is and don't necessarily have goals is because I keep learning new things and it keeps changing what Southpaw is supposed to be and what it's becoming, right? Going back to Joe Rogan, I don't think he knew what he was going to become. And then he's become this bigger than... So because of that, I think he uses plausible deniability, whereas I'm very open to what I'm becoming and trying to be accountable and thinking about it. So instead of like saying, this is what we are, whatever else you think we are, I'm not going to deny anything. I'm still trying to understand what we're becoming. But with that said, early on, because of combat sports, I saw a window into mainstream politics, but like 2 years ahead or 3 years ahead. So reason why I wanted to bring you on was because I already saw through mixed martial arts and combat sports that QAnon and conspiracy theories was going to blow up huge in the mainstream politics. So when I was telling people like QAnon is going to be huge, nobody was believing me. But I, not just because MMA people were talking about QAnon, but having followed MMA for so long, so many political things happen in MMA first, and then it moves to the mainstream. Like Donald Trump was big in MMA before everybody started to believe that this guy was going to become president. And a lot of people even didn't believe it until it happened, right? And even afterwards, they didn't believe it. And maybe even to the day that he lost the election, they still didn't comprehend that he was our president. So in doing this, in following martial arts, I saw martial arts also and combat sports as kind of a canary in the mine, that it gave us a window, because it is such an extreme version of American society. Because even though mixed martial arts is international, so much of it is also very American. It's American, like libertarian, I do what I want, don't tell me what the rules are, you know, limited rules. Like,
I can take care of myself because I'm a tough guy. That type
of stuff. So many MMA fighters also have that, what is that thing, the don't tread on me flag in their gyms, right? That's very common. So it gave me insight into where I thought mainstream politics was headed. So that's why I wanted to have you on. And that's what I'm continuously learning about from combat sports is whatever fledgling thing that is nascent or emergent, I see it in MMA and combat sports, and then I see it in the rest of the world soon after. And usually it's nothing good. It's never like some good left-wing thing or progressive thing or social justice-oriented thing that comes from combat sports that starts to spread.
So why is that? Why do you think the right wing, let me just say this. Why do you think martial arts culture, mixed martial arts, jujitsu culture in particular is so susceptible to the right wing, to these ideas, to, you know, the conspiratorial thinking? Can you speak to that? I mean, you said that like you can see it coming. It's the canary in the coal mine. Why is that?
Well, one of those reasons I already addressed with masculinity, right? I think that's a huge part of it, where masculinity is so much of masculinity is about competition. About when people say alpha, they just mean being number one. And so being number one, competition is very capitalistic ideas, right? And so you also hear a lot of evolution like analogies in MMA and combat sports, which you also hear about in libertarian or anarcho-capitalistic, economic ideas. They often like to quote evolution, right? So, and even like the mixed martial arts like tournament idea, it's like this: there can be only one, right? So all these things. So I don't think people see masculinity as this bridge to competition to like being number one. But masculinity, when I break it down like that, then it is very parallel to right-wing ideas or capitalism. So that's why I think a lot of them also like pyramid schemes, right? Pyramid schemes and multi-level marketing is also very popular in combat sports. There's always people, not even like fighters, a lot of fighters, but also people at the gym will always try to sell you some kind of not sell you just a product, but get you to sign up underneath them. Like QAnon. QAnon, there's wherever there's QAnon, there's also multi-level marketing. They're always going to try to sign you up underneath them for something, right?
There's always a gimmick that they're trying to sell you. Who are some of the biggest offenders that you could name or that you could point out in martial arts culture right now, spreading misinformation, just being right wing assholes? Like I don't know any other way to put it. I know. I guess I'll kind of answer my own question right off the bat. When I first saw the first UFC. This is, everybody says it, seeing tiny Hoist Gracie, short brown guy, like kind of like me, just annihilate these big guys. I totally bought into everything. I bought into, you know, Grandmaster Helio Gracie, you know, saving the girl from the shark infested waters, and Helio Gracie challenging, what was it? Ray Zulu challenging all, you know, the big black evil Ray Zulu. And then you realize years later that all those stories were changed, right? Like,
yeah.
Did Helio Gracie really jump in the shark infested water to save somebody? When you think of like the old jujitsu versus luta libre battles, those were all just poor black communities that like these white Brazilians were just rumbling with all the time.
Yeah. So you see me online always apologizing to people because I always have to shatter their conceptions of hero worship. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I'm gonna have to do this to you. So you remember this.
I had a John Lewis quote, like this whole page that he did. I think he's a Caesar Gracie guy, early MMA, like late 90s MMA. Before MMA really got regulated, he had this really good quote. It was like a page long on the Invincible Fighter, and I had it on my wall for years, and I always felt good and motivated. And then like I find it, and I take a picture of it, and I put it on the Southpaw message board, and they're like, he's a QAnon right-wing asshole. I was like, oh, well. There go the past 10 years of motivation of my life. I said, there goes John Lewis. And I haven't looked at it since. But any particular Gracies you could talk about? Any particular mixed martial artists that we could mention that are kind of the biggest offenders?
Well, I mean, to go back to your previous question about why are people so susceptible, it goes right there to one of the biggest combat sports influences, Some people call the father of mixed martial arts, right? Helio Gracie. And you look at the Gracies, the history of it, and it is also the history of Brazilian fascism. So you go back, and there was an early fascist party, like literal fascist party called the Integralist Party, which is actually now getting popular again in Brazil. And you see them, you know, raising their hands up, like, you know, doing the Hail Hitler signs. Yeah. So that's getting popular, but he was one of the founding members of it. And so even at its roots, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was never even like in mythology, this bottom-up martial arts. It was always a martial art for the ruling class. And it was also a martial art for white supremacy. So a lot of people get confused because you just talked about the brown guy, Hoist Gracie, and they think Latin America, yeah. South America, there can be no white supremacy. They're all brown. But I would say that's like America in its own way is so white supremacist that they can't even fathom somebody, a white person from Latin America. And yeah. It's like, no, there's racism. There's Asians. There's actually one of the biggest Japanese populations outside of Japan is in Brazil. Same thing with Koreans, a huge Jewish population. Huh?
Antonio Inoki. That's how he got the name Antonio. He was found in Brazil by the, Korean Japanese wrestling champion Riki Dozan. He was actually ethnic Korean, born in occupied Korea. Swindled people into thinking he was Japanese. Became the biggest Japanese wrestler they had. Goes to Brazil, sees a discus, you know, a track star named Antonio Inoki, and then Inoki becomes the biggest wrestler in Japanese wrestling history. But that's how he got the name Antonio. That Antonio is not a Japanese name.
Yeah, no wonder Inoki has so many like. Relatives in Brazil, then that explains that. Like, I believe even like Lyoto Machida might be like distant related to him or something. So there's a lot of those kind of things. So yeah, there's all types of, I would say Brazil is actually even more diverse than America as far as different ethnic backgrounds, which is also why it is so racist. People think diversity automatically equals like, don't know what people think. It's some utopian idea. Yeah, there will be no racism, but it's often the opposite. The more diversity there is, the more it's not like all the groups hating on each other. Yeah. The dominant group, the dominant powerful group, which is the white people, like start hating on all the other people. And that's typically what happens. So the Gracies then are actually settlers from Scotland. And actually it kind of parallels with the foundation of the Ku Klux Klan, which were founded by Scottish settlers that came to the US. So it's a similar kind of story. So they were ethnic pure Scots people coming to Brazil. They started this martial art, joined the fascist party. There's even like a whole movement all throughout, not only Brazil, but the rest of Latin America. I think it's called Black Amiento, where it's like about trying to do racial whitening.
Okay. Yeah.
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 So there's a lot of literature written about that. And so it's like all of those timelines coalesce around that time. Right. And so you think about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu then, and it's like, why are they working with cops? Why do they cater so much to cops? And it's like, it's always been a cop art. So even back to the Integralists who were in charge, they were always training cops to always brutalize people of color, Black and Indigenous in particular, right? So that's been the origin. So I think the Gracies have had a very strong influence in modern martial arts as far as making it even more right-wing than it is. And that is also why people are so susceptible, because a lot of people lately in the last several decades got into martial arts through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So you talked about some of the most powerful people, Gracies. How are people so drawn into right-wing politics? Because their first martial art now, right? Like probably when you and I were growing up, the first martial art might have been Taekwondo, maybe, or maybe karate, those two. Yeah. And before us was probably judo and kung fu, right? Depends on when. And then if you're a kid of the 90s, it started becoming Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
So I think Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu became a pipeline for that.
I mean, when you look at some of the names, there was, I think it was, I got it here. I think it was Bloody Elbow was the website. I just want to throw out some of these names. So obviously the Gracies, Henzo Gracie, big time. I saw a documentary on Henzo. I loved Henzo. The guy was all smiles, incredibly charismatic. And then you see him on social media and he just says like just really just nasty things to people. I saw him one time go off on a guy making fun of a guy's girlfriend. I was like, what are you doing? Like you're like a millionaire. You're known all over the world and you're petty on Twitter. But, you know, there's the Gracies. And I swear I used to worship like Hickson Gracie and Hoist Gracie and Grandmaster Helio. I used to think that these people were wizards. And then, you know, you realize who they are. But Jorge Masvidal, whose father is Cuban, who's a Cuban refugee, that's to be understood. Tito Ortiz is on the city council. I think it's in Huntington Beach, and he has continuously put his foot in his mouth. They're already trying to pull him off the city council. Rich Franklin, that broke my heart. I liked Rich Franklin. Ronda Rousey, Uriah Faber, Israel Adesanya, and then Pat Miletich, who was at the January 6th protest. They got him, I think, on social media, on film, just at the protest, acting like a total clown. And it's heartbreaking because martial arts, you know, for me, I was the Karate Kid generation. You're taught that it's supposed to make you pure and righteous, and it doesn't. Right? Yeah. These people, they have these alpha male, macho, toxic personalities, and it's like on steroids in these communities, and it's a total shame.
But I wouldn't necessarily put Israel Adesanya on the same list as them. I think he definitely has like edgy or cringy statements, and he had some antics in the cage that were definitely like not correct, right? But I guess it's
the other people conspiratorial.
Yeah, and I've heard him say anything about Q. I guess the other people you named are so far like not only right wing, but also so far out there in their beliefs about the world, right? As far as like lizard people and like, you know, the intergalactic pedophile rings. I don't want to necessarily associate like his like more bread and butter, like, you know, cringe from time to time at the magnitude of that. And I think people have to understand the Overton window in MMA and combat sports is so swung so far to the right that like you have to put some, like, we have to create some kind of spectrum here because, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, trying to be nice, they're going to be cringy. And I remember there was a really good interview you just gave on Current Affairs, and it was cracking up. I'm paraphrasing you. I forgot the direct quote, but you said you wanted to create a cringe-free podcast.
Yeah.
That kind of cracked me up because I'm just like, you listen to, like literally Joe Rogan having a conversation with anybody, and it's total just like a cringe fest. Like looking at someone like Dave Rubin or Jordan Peterson, who aren't even like anywhere near as intelligent as they think they are or as their fans think they are. And to just sit there, and listen to them talk. It's heartbreaking. It's cringy. Like, I don't know any other way to put it, but you know, I one of the good things about Southpaw is it has smashed these idols for me, right? It's, mm-hmm. I want a view of the reality. I want a view of truth. I don't want to believe things that aren't true. But martial arts culture tends to, I don't know, it tends to be cultish, right? And I think there's a lot of talk about that. There's a really cool episode of the Penn and Teller show, Bullshit. And I'm not a big fan of them, but that was a good show. And they did it on martial arts. And they talk about how a lot of these martial arts, you know, coaches, senseis, gurus, whatever you want to call them, they end up exploiting a lot of their students, free labor, getting them to clean, getting them to teach classes, and it can be very, very exploitative.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, because there are parents that watch this show, there are young people that watch this show, and yes, there are people who are interested in combat sports that are watching this show now. What can you describe, like, an ideal teacher, an ideal instructor? Like, if you had a magic wand and you could design, you know, some kids walk into a gym and you can design the perfect instructor. Like, could you articulate some points what you would look for? You know, some people just send their kids into gyms not realizing what they're getting into. There's not a lot of standards. There's not a lot of government oversight. But for you as a parent, as a lifelong martial artist, as an educator and a writer, somebody who's very much in that culture, what are some tenets, some points you could describe in an ideal instructor?
I think their principles should be apparent in how they run their business. So I think the moment you walk in, you want, number one, transparency. So even from the website, I'm not just talking about price. That's like secondary to this. I mean, price is going to be a barrier to entry as far as you come in or not. But if we're just talking about safety, then you have to think about transparency. So from their website, are they listing like what their rules are? Not just for, I'm not talking about just for the students, what the code of conduct is for the teachers, for the instructors, right? Like what rights you have as a student, what rights you have as a parent. When you walk in, also, are there cameras around? Meaning, I'm not talking about for theft. I'm talking about cameras because if the owner is not around, or even for the owner, like, so that there's documentation and there's always an eye, especially when you're dealing with children,
yeah,
there's an eye watching that things are transparent and there's nothing, there's no point in the gym where you're teaching a class and you could do something and no, but you only have witnesses to fall on, which might be kids.
Yeah.
You want to make sure there's more than that. So you want to make sure that there's some code of conduct rules, not just typical like for the kids, but also like what is acceptable and unacceptable behavior from the instructors. So then if they cross that line, you have that ability to be like, hey, this is one of your rules. These are one of your standards that you said you would never break. The teacher has transgressed that, or my kid brought up some concerns and it made me worry that something was going on. And then the owner or the instructor themselves can like talk about it. So whenever you're working with children, it should be the same rules as working with kids in any class environment, right? Yeah. And I think people treat martial arts differently from the expectations you have from school teachers teaching children. And it's like, no. The expectations should be the same. They might not teach you about history or math, but as far as appropriate behavior, that the expectations should be the same. I think people often like turn that off because they want the martial arts instructor to be a disciplinarian to their kids. And it's like, no, that's your job, right? They're there to teach martial arts. So that's the other thing. What are they there to do? Are they there to just teach martial arts, or are they trying to indoctrinate them into something, right? And then you also want to make sure that they think about consent. And they think about like individual people's rights. So it's like they're there to teach you martial arts, but they don't have ownership over you. So that's another thing to expect, is like, they have to always ask for permission and consent. They can't just grab you and, like, I don't know, fling you across the wall. There should always be like asking for permission, which actually happens in a lot of martial arts. Can I use you for a demonstration? Tap if you feel this, you know, there, do you want to spar? There's always this question and ask. So that's something that you should also see, and also respect of your individual comfort, right? There should be no like duress. Whenever you see duress, whenever you see this kind of social pressure to do things you don't want to do, that's when like cultishness starts. So I would also say, you know, look for all those things when you go there, and also check their social media, because people, even no matter how hard people try to like curate their social media to like hide their, some of their worst beliefs, because they know some of their ideas won't be popular with everybody, because social media just allows you to say whatever, they might let some stuff slip out. And yeah. So especially I think during last year during the BLM protests, a lot of people show their ass, like telling you that they were racist, like they told you what they thought about BLM, right? They couldn't help themselves. You know, a lot of people broke their own rules about not being political on the post and just showed you their right-wing politics. And it's not even right-wing politics, it's racist politics, right? So I mean, I guess racist politics is right-wing, but some people still have this outdated idea that these politics have nothing to do with morals. And it's like, I can't go into the past. I have no idea what it was like for how people use those terms back in the day. But today, if you approach Donald Trump, I would be hard pressed to believe you don't have any racist beliefs. And even if you're a person of color, then you might have some internalized racist beliefs.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I would check their social media as well.
Okay. So, for those that don't know, Southpaw has some really cool swag that you can get. For those that don't know, I'm wearing the really cool Southpaw T-shirt here. But one of the Southpaw shirts you sell says "No gurus, no masters."
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why is that? Why is that? I mean, you just went over like what I should look for in an instructor, the problems. Why is it Southpaw likes to support the idea of no gurus, no masters? Again, if you can expand upon the whole, you know, cultish trend in martial arts.
Yeah, that slogan was created by, not even me, it was one of the members. I don't want to say her name, but just in case she wants to stay anonymous. But it was somebody in the group came up with that idea because there was so much cultishness, but not only cultishness, but she trains Muay Thai. And we focused so much on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it was during a time there was so much awareness about sexual assault happening in Muay Thai gyms in the Northeast. So that's another type of cult worship where it doesn't have to be conspiratorial. It could be cult worship where you groom students and then you abuse them, right? So she came up with this idea of like, I wish I could just find a gym that where there was no gurus, no masters, right? And I was like, yeah, that's perfect. That is like the way I think about teaching pedagogy. And so some people might like push back and say, well, doesn't guru just mean teacher? And it's like, well, master itself, right, is an English translation for another language's word for teacher as well. And I would say even the word teacher, when I call you teacher, because you taught me, I don't know, actually in every sense, right? If you taught me how to ride a bike, right? Then I don't elevate you.
Yeah.
I would just say Christian taught me how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
And that's it. I talk about what you did. But when I give you a role, when I say Christian is my teacher, Christian taught me how to ride a bike. He's my bicycle teacher.
Yeah.
Even outside of the dojo, once I give you that honorific, once I make you that role of my teacher, right? So then now there's this hierarchical thing. Then there's a problem. So guru in other languages, I think Sanskrit-based languages means teacher, but I'm saying especially in a martial arts setting, when you give somebody that status of teacher, you already make things, you can make it agnostic and just say it's the person who teaches, but it's going to be so much more than that, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot about the works of this actually Brazilian educational theorist named Paulo Freire, and he talks about how pedagogy itself. There you go. There you go, my man. So he talks about how pedagogy itself can be oppressive. And it's an idea, I guess a lot of people haven't thought about it. And I've been talking about how a lot of martial arts pedagogy itself is very oppressive, and how a lot of them are trying to like recreate a past that didn't exist. They're trying to like name everything under like this Japanese imperialist pedagogy that didn't exist in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And why? Because they're trying to create this like oppressive pedagogy, right? So for all those reasons, then this idea of teacher, guru, master, they're all synonymous within martial arts.
Yeah.
Even if, and so it's like, I tend to use the term trainer because it seems like the least loaded. You know, some people like to use coach. But yeah, once you start getting to teacher, master, sensei, you know, any of those things, professor, guru, it becomes so much more than that. And so it then is asking too much of the student to think of me in that way without giving me that much mental space in your mind. It's like, dude, if you don't want them to hold you in such reverence, then don't have them call you that.
Yeah, there was this meme you posted, and it was I'm forgetting it now, and it was I forget it. I'm losing it now, but I'd forgotten it. But there's one more thing I wanted to touch on before we go to plugs and we wrap it up is Gina Carano. What the heck happened with her, Sam? She was making that Star Wars money, right? Mm-hmm. She was making that Lucasfilm money, and now she's going to be making movies in Ben Shapiro's basement. So for those of us that don't know, 10 years ago, if Gina Carano would have beaten a woman named Chris Cyborg, we would have had Ronda Rousey 10 years early. But she did. She went into movies, made these big movies, Deadpool, right? Biggest movie in the country, Mandalorian, biggest TV show in the country. And after getting several warnings from the other A-listers on the show, she basically puts out a tweet comparing modern conservatives and the treatment of conservatives to Jewish people or Jewish victims of the Holocaust leading up to the Final Solution. And she lost her job as a result of it. So, I mean, and you want to add your two cents to that?
Just like the canary in the mine, right? I've been talking, I mean, even in the group, we've been talking about her for like a year before that even happened, right? So So people will say that's a mistake. It can't be a mistake if she's been doing that for a year.
It's not isolated.
Yeah, there's a pattern.
Yeah.
So it's more surprising that it took Disney. Actually, I did hear from people who worked there that they had been aware of this for a long time. But, you know, typical capitalist approach is like she was part of a popular franchise bringing them this money. So they wanted to ignore it as much as possible. But the thing is, the pressure to fire her was so much bigger, I would even say, last year.
Yeah.
This recent thing like happened so quickly, there wasn't even a fervor for her to be fired. It was more like after the fact, everybody celebrated it. It
just happened.
But that was more of like, it didn't even get widespread yet. Her bosses saw it. They didn't even need to figure out like, what do people think about it? They're like, that's it, you're out. So she just pissed off her bosses, and unfortunately it took them too long. But it had nothing to do with like societal pressure. At that point, it was just like, nah, this is too much.
All that Star Wars money down the drain. Now, I'm a teacher, right? I talked about this with my teacher. I believe in second chances. All she had to do was educate herself. She had all the resources to educate herself, come out and say, I'm sorry. Instead, she doubled down. And the very people who trashed her, trashed her character, trashed the toughness and so-called masculinity of her character are now the very same people trying to defend her. I mean, but that's the right wing. Sam, I could talk to you all day, every day about martial arts, about pro wrestling. One of these days, we actually got to have a conversation about wrestling. But I do have to let you go shortly. Is there anything you want to plug? We posted down below Southpaw. Pod.com. If you can, please check out episode 49. Check out the newest episodes. What can you tell us, Sam?
Yeah, if you like this interview, I also did an interview on current affairs that you could check out. But usually it's the other way. I'm the host and I'm interviewing other people. So check out the podcast. You can find it wherever podcasts are, wherever you listen to podcasts, Southpaw. And then go to southpawpod.com and if you want to support us, all the ways to support us are there as far as following us, subscribing, but most importantly, you know, donations, contributions, financial support, you know, material support. You could do one-time donations on there, you could do recurring donations. All of that helps to not only support me, but support this cause, and also then to help pay to increase the staff.
All right. Thank you very much, Sam. For those of us watching the show, you want to check out Southpaw, check it out. Check out the episode I was on. You want to look up Brazilian Integralism. We got all the links there. Days of Unity, donating to Revolution Radio, please do so. For Sam, for Leah, for Brian, for everybody, I am Christian. Thank you very much. Please donate to Revolution Radio. Sam, if you don't mind hanging out for a minute, I'll chat with you right after we log off.
Sure, sure.
Folks, thanks a lot. Thank you, Sam. Have a good night.
Bye.